Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Meet the Manager. It's our regular catch-up with the best advice from some of the community's top FPL managers. Yes, we will focus on those with a great rank history, but we're adding to that this season. We're including managers with an interesting story to tell as well, and about how FPL is impacting on their lives and also will impact on our lives by offering us some unique advice. My name is Joe, and today I'm joined by the manager who meets the managers. Not me, it's the other manager that meets the managers. It's Andy, aka Greyhead, who has created the Great and the Good League, where over the seasons we've been learning from some of the top managers in the game, and somehow some bloke called Joe is in that list as well. Greyhead is pretty good too, and great and good too, I should say, with a finish of 85th in 2018-19, another in the top 10k in 2012, and is currently in the top 10k once more. Greyhead, welcome. How are you?
Very well, Joe, and thank you very much. Although I think you're being a bit too kind on the introduction. I like to think of myself as mediocre and middling rather than great and good.
Now, I'm in your league, and so you've deemed me to be great and good. Yeah, I've never finished in the top 100, and you have. So that's why I say that. It sounds it's a bit odd. But nevertheless, what we're going to do is we're going to chat about the league, how it started, who's in it, what you're learning from them, and a bit about your own management as well. And then also, as a snapshot of your thinking, we're going to look ahead to game week 13 and some of your plans there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a picture of the Great and the Good League as it stands so far. This is probably, I think this was going to be going out on Wednesday. We're recording this, so currently it's hot off the press, but by Wednesday it perhaps won't be. And this is the current league. And so, yeah, tell us about the Great and the Good League, just how it started before we talk about the people in it. How did it all start?
Yeah, so started doing it about 4 years ago now, I think it was. So, and the reason I did it was that I think it's fair to say I was fairly casual or relaxed, whatever the right phrase is, before then. I was in a few kind of work mini leagues, as many of us are when you first start. And I wasn't doing particularly well that year. So I decided to do a bit more research, and that's when I discovered Scout and things like that. And I also came across some of the articles by Top Marks, who I think you've had on the show in the past, and he did some articles on the Hall of Fame. And I also came across Scoutcast for the first time. When I was watching those sort of things and reading the articles, I could never quite work out why I was always slightly behind the scores that they were all getting. So I started just kind of, you know, casually kind of checking scores, tracking the scores, seeing what kind of moves they were doing. And then over time, as it came towards the start of that year, I thought, well, I might as well kind of have a go at writing an article. I felt creative for that day in particular. And I've kind of tracked it ever since, really. And it's really, it's like I say, it's a combination of managers who are obviously incredibly good Hall of Fame types, but there's also what I would call FPL personalities and other things as well. So I try and make it a good mix.
Okay, yeah, so there's a mixture of styles there as well, and that's what I get, and presumably other people get from this as well, is that there's a sort of maverick manager, there's the dullard manager, there's those that risk-taking, don't take risks. Take us through some of the people in it then. Who's in the Great and the Good League, and I get, what are their sort of characteristics that they bring to this league?
Yeah, so I try and change it kind of every year, but as you said, I like to have a nice mix of styles, because I think that's what you really learn from. I think it'd be kind of it may be a bit boring if you just kind of everyone had the same approach, really. So I think within the league, you've got some kind of well-known people from the FPL community. So obviously people like yourself, Joe, and Az and Mark and FPL general. But then I've also got what I'd classify as those individuals who may be not so present on things like FPL Twitter. So Fabio, for example, and the star turn himself, which is Magnus Carlsen. Mm. So, and again, that's quite interesting just to kind of get their perspectives. But
so for those that don't know who Magnus Carlsen is, he's quite good at something else apart from FPL.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He's not bad at chess, apparently. Yeah. So he does that as a
hobby.
Sideline. It's a hobby, yeah. But annoyingly, he seems to be quite good at both things, which is more than as mere mortals can do. But so he came from the he kind of obviously came to four, I think, a couple of seasons ago when he had a very high finish. I think he finished 10th or something like that. But it's people like that, really. So it's a good mix of kind of personalities and people who kind of had good ranks, really. But I always try and get that mix of styles, because it's it just makes it a bit more interesting.
And am I right? You have a sort of a feeder league into this, so
yeah,
and
yeah,
so whoever's
yeah.
top of that can join this league.
Yeah, I started it as a bit of fun last year, really, because I've started to get people kind of inquire in terms of how they get past the bouncers. And
I get that from Meet the Manager. They say, I'm great and good as well. Why aren't I in your league? Why don't you meet me?
So anyway, it's a bit of fun, but it's actually really nice, actually, because the chap who's come in this year, Les Cordwell, he won it last year, and he's doing quite well again this time around. But that's quite good as well, because I mean, again, almost like it's good to get people who I'm a believer in terms of we shouldn't be so snobbish from an FPL perspective. I think every manager has a story to tell or has something that we can learn from. And actually, having someone, you know, maybe nobody has ever heard of, who's come into the league, and these we are learning from week to week. So I think it's all good. It's just made it a bit more inclusive as well. So and it also gives me a chance of when people do say, why can't I be in a great and a good? I say, win the mini league and I'll let you win, no problem at all.
Definitely. And Les there is in, I'm in a sort of a mid table group with Les there. So it's myself and Andy, Let's Talk FPL Andy, Magnus, Mark Southerns and Les there, and Fabio and Yavuz as well. Yavuz is in the Hall of Fame, is that right?
Yeah, no, he's a really, and that's another reason I like to kind of pick people. So he's got the good story behind him is that this year he's going to go for his 8th top 10K in a row.
Wow.
So
in a row.
I quite like, in a row. So he'll be equaling the man, the myth, Willy Wonka, if you like. So he's looking to do that this year. So again, that's a nice kind of story to kind of bring into the whole league as we track it through as well. So whilst he's not doing great at the moment, I know he will come good. So it's actually going to be quite interesting to see how he kind of works his way back into contention.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, looking at this league. So from Az, who's top at the moment, just outside the top 10K, down to Yavuz, is well inside the top 300K this stage of the season. I remember this stage of this last season and two or three seasons before, I think I was struggling to get out of the top 2 million. It was pretty dark days. And I remember seeing this league before thinking, oh, I must be bottom or something. And I wasn't. And lots of us were doing quite bad. I remember FPL General, who is very consistent, had a shocker that particular year as well. And so many others. So why do you think it, this season, so many of us in this league are doing, I would say, relatively well compared to other seasons?
I think if you look at the start of the season, I think the majority of people had a very good start who were in the FPL community, because the template was so strong at the start of the season. So and the template worked. So for the first part, most of us got off to a reasonably good start. And I think also, I think by nature, a lot of these managers tend to be kind of planners, and okay. I do think there's been less uncertainty as there has been in previous. There still is a degree of uncertainty when it comes to things like rotation, but I think it's easy to kind of plan, and as a result of which, I think everyone's rank within this more kind of prominent community does tend to be slightly higher. So, but to be honest, I mean, I quite enjoyed it when I know it sounds going to sound awful. Quite enjoyed it when people were struggling, because actually that was quite good, and I think people quite enjoyed themselves kind of having to come back from a much kind of much further back, as it were.
Yeah, I remember that. My one of my favourite seasons has been when I got back into the top 100k after being, you know, nearly 4 million. And I see that as a bigger achievement than getting into the top 10K if I had been in the top 50K for the whole season or something, because then you're just sort of treading water a bit. But it is more interesting. It's more of an exciting narrative as well.
Yeah.
With the current great and good, one of the things you do is you sort of track the sort of template of the players they're picking. Yeah. So to timestamp this, I mean, these videos are designed really to look ahead to the next game week, but also, you know, people can dip into them anytime this season, next season, you know, seasons to come, just to get an idea of how you're thinking and indeed the great and the good are thinking as well. So going into game week 13, post game week 12, what is the current great and the good template, and what typical formation, who they're captaining? So what's the state of the players they're picking?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually now shifted to, it's a very strong template. So like I said, I think there's a strong template at the start, and then we had a period of flux, if you like, but it's coming back to becoming very kind of strong template. You're noticing when I look at the teams across the board, there was some kind of like, everyone's got them. I mean, obviously everyone's got Salah, everyone's got Trent, as it were, but we're seeing people move back to this strong back line, so it's becoming everyone's got Cancelo, everyone's got, like I say, Trent, everyone's got at least one of the Chelsea defenders, and obviously Livermento as well. Yeah. So it's shifting to that very strong back line, if you like, and then you've got Salah and some others, and that tends to be where they're making slight differentiation between themselves in terms of who they are picking. And then the front line, at the moment, you've got Antonio, for example, who's in there, and he's fairly consistent across the board, as is Tony. And then just this week, we've seen Kane come into it for the first time, I think as a result of the Conte effect, as it were.
So what we're looking at is a sort of four at the back with a sort of a Livramento. It could be another defender, but this core of Alexander-Arnold, Cancelo, and one of the Chelsea players. One of the Chelsea defenders. So it could be another Chelsea defender. And then in the middle, we're looking at Salah, definite. And then it could be, I've got in my notes here, Rafinha, Foden, and Bomo, and Brownhill as well, who guesses the sort of 4.5 of choice.
Yeah. The enabler. Which is, I mean, that's why it's quite good to do the template, because you can see who the cheap outlier is, as it were, along the way. So, but what has been interesting here, Jerry, is the fact that it's that it really has shifted. So we've often talked about, you know, big at the back, at the back happening, but this is the first time it's been so evident in terms of formation. So normally you see that everyone kind of drift towards 3-4-3, and that's the way it was at the start of this season. But it's, I think, what is it, eight of them this year, eight of them this week had 4-3-3s, and even you had a couple of people with five at the back. Yeah. Right? So it's a complete shift towards bigger the back is actually a reality rather than just
It's something that on the Scoutcast this week, by the time this comes out, it will have happened, but we are going to be discussing about formation. And a lot of people see the big at the back as at the expense of at the front, but what you're saying is slightly different with the great and the good. So it's not a case of 4-4-2, it's not a case of 4-5-1, it seems to be 4-3-3. And so you mentioned Antonio, a lot of faith there. So 13 of these managers have Antonio, and you've got Tony, very well owned. And now Kane has crept in. So do you think, I can only speak for myself, but do you think that a lot of us in this league, we're clinging on to a third striker because it's what we know?
I think there is some of that, if you like. And I think also I have noticed that there's a lot of kind of placeholding in terms of in terms of strikers. So there was a very common move a couple of weeks ago to bring Vardy in, for example, and then it's been a very common move to then bring Kane in to replace Vardy as well. So I think some of that is kind of like it's almost like preparing themselves and having that price point, if you like, to make sure that when it comes down to the further variations, they've got that kind of that marking spot to bring someone else in. Because, well, a lot of this depends on what happens with United and their interim manager, as it were. But Ronaldo, I mean, he may well be an option in a couple of weeks because their fixtures do look quite good as well. So
that sort of formation, and what you were saying about placeholders, that would indicate that this group of managers are planners, as you said. And so they're always looking at, I mean, something I will talk about price points, but it's a bit, other people might not use those phrasing, but it's looking at the structure of the team in terms of who can I get in, and I want to get them in, and I want to have that position for them, a Ronaldo, a Lukaku, for example.
Yeah, no, I mean, even if you look at some of the managers in this group who kind of sometimes can be called maverick, if you like. So even if you look at Magnus, all right. So
is he a maverick? Magnus is a maverick in this.
Well, no, he's a calculating maverick. Is that we'll go with that, because he always keeps a fairly kind of strong core to his team, if you like. But then he will take kind of calculated risks along the way. So one thing you'll notice, he does that a lot with his captaincy, for example. Okay. So he'll normally be, he's a big fan of Salah, but just this last week he kind of took a risk on Kane. Now it didn't pay off, but it's an approach he does quite a lot. As in, he'll take an odd risk on a captain as you go through the season. He did it again earlier season to Vardy. He did it last season to Vardy as well, and that paid off quite well. So it's kind of a known pattern for him, if you like. But it's a bit, the maverick term is a bit overused, but it's a fact he's not really a maverick because he has that kind of core spine to it. He just then looks for the areas that he can differentiate himself and climb ranks.
Okay, and anyone else here who's a maverick that you have maverick tendencies?
I mean, everyone calls Mark a maverick. I don't necessarily think he is a maverick, to be honest. I think he tends to have a good strong spine to his team, and when he does take his hits, or when he does take the minus fours, so everyone kind of says acclaims him as being a maverick. But he does it at the right time. He does it in kind of bursts, if you like. Do you want, normally at the start of the season, as opposed to
my take on Mark when his management is because he's a journalist, an ex-journalist. He plays like a journalist, I think. He assesses what the trends will be, and get, so sometimes he'll make moves and you think, why is he getting that? And then you look at the fixtures 4 weeks' time, you think, oh, he's going to want that player then. And we probably all will, but he's probably going to get them 0.5 cheaper. And that's so it looks maverick, I think, but it's not. It's just ultra planning.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, like I say, he's just very careful about when he does the timing of his hits as well. I think sometimes people assume you just either take hits all the time. It's actually when you time them, which is, and the timing piece is the biggest thing that I've kind of learned following all these matches. Yeah. As in, it's not, you've got to work out when to strike and when not to strike in terms of your plans and your tactics. Whether that be for your chip play or whether that be for your hits and your transfers as well.
Okay, well, let's have a look at your career history, and just to see. So you started doing this about 4 years ago, and it looks like it already paid off. So, I mean, looking at your career history here, you've been playing since 2010. You had a top 10K finish in 2012. So it was around about 2017 you started to look at this great and the good. And hey, presto, 2018-19, 85th. Now I've got 840 something, and that was supreme luck, and you know, just playing how I play, but with things, the chips falling your way, and it was I don't think I could have got any higher that season. But to get to 85, that's a big deal, I think.
So yeah, well, I mean,
do you feel that you learned a lot then, or?
Well, no, I think that's one of the reasons I couldn't stop doing it. So I did it, and then I got the rating first. I thought, hang on, there must be something in this. So I better keep it going. But now I think whenever you get to that kind of level, there's a lot of variance in your play. But I think, I mean, a few key decisions went away. So I think that was the year that Jimenez, I got him early, and that kind of like helped propel me all the way through. I had a good solid team, and there were silly things like, I mean, towards the end, I brought in Rondon, for goodness sake, and who's not, you know, an FPL hero, but he came in and scored a couple of goals for me. Do you know what I mean? It was, so there is that balance of luck, but I think by just by doing the series, it did make me think in terms of a bit more about kind of my approach. It kind of made me more engaged. I mean, just doing that on a weekly basis just make you think about the game a bit more. And I think engagement is kind of a key factor in terms of anybody's success as well.
Okay, well I've got a sort of a series of questions about your general strategy. So we can see, I'll fire these off to you, and then you can sort of tell me, you know, what, if anything, from doing the great and the good has sort of impacted you, impacted any of these decisions. So first of all is hits. So a lot in the great and good, they tend to take maybe 6-7 hits. They're not big hit takers, but how's your own hit taking?
I'm very cautious. Ooh. I'm ultra cautious in terms of the hits. I mean, I think I've only taken them one so far this year. And I think that is, again, that would be something I would say I was kind of influenced by this group of managers in terms of the way they play the game. So, as I said, I mean, in previous years, I had followed Willy Wonka, and he was always known for being ultra conservative. Yeah. So I think that was something that was there anyway. And I think, as I also mentioned, it's the timing of the hits. So if I am going to take hits, it'll be at the start as opposed to towards the end of the season, just because I think you're more likely to have an impact from those hits doing it that way.
With captaincy, now this is an odd season to ask this question because it's basically Salah, but at the moment anyway. But what's your attitude to captaincy? Do you traditionally go for that Salah pick, or do you look elsewhere? And you know, how do you decide on a captain?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I learned actually was that just the amount of time you should spend thinking about captaincy and armband decision. So I fully admit when I first started being serious about it, I wouldn't spend that much time on it. But then you look at it and realize it's 25% of your score, so you've got to you should really spend a bit of time kind of working through it. So I do that, and then I actually a lot of these guys are very good in terms of their caps and the hits rate, so I would tend to kind of anything that they kind of any articles or anything they post. I mean, Tom Freeman I think is an excellent reader of the game, one of the best actually. So I do tend to kind of listen to kind of his views in terms of where the captaincy may go as well. So but generally I'm quite conservative, so I will kind of stick on your Mohs or whatever along the way.
And your general attitude to risk, so obviously not risk taking with the captaincy, but do you take a risk? I mean, I know you mentioned Tom as well. Tom is well known for his fourth midfielder risk taking. Sure. That's the sort of he channels all his risk into one Theo Walcott shaped hole in his midfield.
No, I mean, I'm a very conservative kind of manager, but I think, and that kind of suits me this year, because that would be interesting just to kind of mention. I think each year, each season requires a different style or a different approach, and suits a different style, a different approach as well. So if you think about this year, I think with all the rotation, the fact that a lot of the bigger teams who do rotate are the ones where the points are coming from, I think it's sensible to have that bench, or the bench is being used quite a lot. So actually, what one stat for you, Joe, is that I look back at the number of auto subs that are used, you know, year to year, and last year, this year you've had 8 auto subs. They've used your bench 8 times, but then last year you don't use it once. So and that's a pattern that.
Sorry, is it me or the great and the good?
Yeah, you.
Oh, me.
You. But generally, when you look across the great and good, I mean, it's a much higher the number of kind of auto subs that have come on. So actually, having that bench is being more important. So again, that kind of suits my more conservative style. I've got someone to come on.
Well, that is interesting, and that shows why the likes of hopping on players like Livramento, who've been a great bench player, this week, indeed, same thing for me, Saar off my bench, points.
Yeah.
And so on. Because players like, I think it's a combination of COVID and it's still the hang up. There's still the odd player still all tested positive, can't play this week. And also our attitude to rotation as well. I think we've become a bit more that the sort of ethos of only pick nailed on players. Well, I still don't know whether Chilwell was going to start every single game, but I don't care now.
No. And I think that's the attitude you have to take, because if you look at the current trend whereby it's those defenders who are scoring a lot of the points. As you said, Chilwell, you know, James, even Trent, for example, and Cancelo certainly are not nailed on. So I think you have to kind of accommodate the fact that you are probably going to use that first off your bench. So I think it's probably best to have someone in that place that you feel comfortable to actually do something beyond even Livramento.
That's really interesting, that one. So favoured formation, I guess it's fluid now, isn't it? Because the formation you start with could be completely different to the one you end up with because of we're all embracing rotation.
Yeah, and I think that's one of, again, something that I learned, as in, again, I mean, over previous years, people have drifted towards a 3-4-3, but you can't really have a favourite formation. It kind of like constricts you too much in terms of your approach. You've got to adapt to whatever the season's going to give you. At the moment, it's all about the kind of wing backs and having that defensive strength. But who knows? In a couple of weeks' time, that may well change as well. So I think flexibility is probably the biggest lesson I've learned in terms of formation.
Are there any other sort of tips and strategies that I haven't mentioned from the great and the good, or perhaps, you know, obviously your own mind as well?
No, I think the other thing that I did learn was around using the fixture swings a lot more. So for example, this season is probably a good example. So when in game week 7, you know, when the Chelsea fixtures swung, that was the time I kind of played a wild card, and that has really kind of helped propelled me up the ranks, as it were. So I think being much more aware of those swings, and then either using your chips or actually making sure you're kind of doubling or tripling down on a certain team, that brings a lot of benefit as well. So I think that's something key. I've been able to keep an eye on those fixture swings, because that's when you can really, really take advantage and hopefully move up and get a few more green arrows.
And this is a bit of advice for me and other managers who have done okay, but not in the top 100. I mean, it can't just be luck getting top 100. So what advice would you give managers to get into that top 100? What do they need to do to kick on to that level?
I genuinely believe that you shouldn't do anything different. Okay. So I think a lot of people get into quite high ranks and then feel they need to, you know, take even more risks or take even more kind of gambles to get into the higher rank. But if I can be kind of a case in point, I did very little different in terms of my approach, as in I had seven, eight kind of players who were always fairly consistent throughout the year. And then if I was going to gamble, I gambled on those fringe players. So I genuinely believe that you don't necessarily have to change your approach. In fact, if you do change your approach, then it can almost kind of damage you, if you like, as you go forward on that one. Because there are other people in that same position who will make mistakes. Mm. So it's all about kind of minimizing those mistakes. So I think it's okay to be dullard if you get that high up. Yeah. Don't worry about it. You will still get good ranks.
Well, I mean, that what you've just said there is a common theme in these videos is to play your own game, which sounds like a terrible FPL cliche, but it is what people are used to. You know, you've got to be flexible as well, but at the same time, so the times I have and the times a lot of the other managers here have decided, I think I'll be a bit different with the captain. I think I'll do something very, very different. A lot of the time it just doesn't work out.
No, I think you've got to do what suits your style. Mm. Late riser was in the great and the good last year, and I know his style is very much, he is, I hate the phrase, upside chasing, but he takes more kind of risks along that way, and that suits him. But I noticed when I, and then when I saw that, and then I thought, okay, I'll have a go at that. And it just ended badly. It just felt like it was a, you know, it's an ill-fitting pair of shoes. Yeah. Just don't go. Yeah. Don't do what you feel comfortable with. It doesn't necessarily mean everyone needs to be ultra conservative, because he's been very successful doing that in the past. And I've seen other managers who do take those kind of like those gambles and done very well. But I think you have to know yourself. Yeah. In terms of what you're comfortable with, because otherwise,
it's your own attitude to risk as well. There's no point if you're risk averse to suddenly, in one element of your life, a small element that is of FPL, just being completely kamikaze with everything.
Exactly.
Because you need to have a certain mindset for it to work effectively.
Let's
have a look at your game week 13 side to find out sort of tangibly how you're putting those strategies into action with your transfers and captaincy plans. So what we do is, well, as I said, you're currently inside the top 10K. You're at 8,370. So well in there, I would say. And so we'll put your team up. You should go through that and tell me any particular plans and, you know, any particular players you're thinking of. And I've got some other slides as well I'll put up as well to help us looking at the next nine fixtures right up until January the 1st, and also the last four expected goal involvement stats as well. So I'll put your team up here. You go through the team and tell us.
Do you want me to just talk your way through the team?
Yeah, just talk us way through the team. Yeah.
Okay, all right. I mean, I've got Sarr in goal, which and I think he'll stay for now. Although I think I've got other fires to fight.
He's good next two, isn't he? Next two fixtures.
I think that's going to be the interesting piece of my team. I think I've got a lot of good players who've got a good next two.
Yeah.
And then there will need to be some changes made. So it's a Sarr goal, and then a pretty what is becoming a fast approaching kind of template in defence. So I've got Trent, Cancelo, and James as well. I put Dias in, and again I put him in this week. So again, from my perspective, I know I would definitely have got more points if I put Chilwell in this week. But again, I can see the fixtures ahead for City. I still feel are very strong, and I think I just like having some kind of City covers, because I can see. Some weeks Cancelo's going to play, some weeks Dias is going to play. Hopefully sometimes they both play at the same time. Yeah. But I wanted to make sure I had that piece in there as well. So I guess that kind of goes back to kind of following the fixtures piece, from learning from the great and good. Obviously, Livramento on the bench from a defensive point of view. And then the midfield, I got obviously Mo. Son, who I got early, so he was one that came in on the wild card, and I think I like him, and obviously the Spurs fixtures look good. Conte's in as well. I prefer him at the moment to Kane, just because of the amount of the money he saves me to allow me to do other things elsewhere, and again build that squad, because we've had a rotation up to this point. It's only going to get worse with the amount of games coming up. It's just going to be ridiculous in terms of rotation. So I prefer that. Although I was a bit worried because he did look quiet this last game. But I'm hoping that will he'll settle down as they get used to the new way of playing. And then it comes to the ones I would say that I'm looking at to, you know, change up, or there'll be some movement upon. So I've got Trossard, Rafinha, my man Pukki, and Jimenez and Antonio. So it's those five that I will look changes upon. Probably not this week. I'll probably roll it and just give myself a bit of time just to see what occurs, and change it from there.
Two of the things I was thinking of there that strikes me is that there's a lot of differentials there. There is this spine, this bait in defence, and with Salah as a sort of captain most weeks, probably all weeks. And then you've got, but it's quite different. The Trossard, Pukki, Jimenez and Rafinha are quite, Rafinha in terms of ownership is very highly owned, but in terms of, you know, they're different. There's a lot of the great and good I've noticed are moving away from Rafinha. And I just wanted that strikes me. There's quite a different looking midfield Does that make you feel uncomfortable at the moment? I mean, they've got good fixtures now, but I guess that's what you're saying. Long term, that you feel a bit uncomfortable having them.
Yeah, I think for me, I feel comfortable having that defence. Mm. That defence gives me a good platform. I think Mo gives you a good platform, particularly in the current environment where you kept him. Very comfortable with Son because he's a proven point scorer over time, so that's all good. So where I've had, you know, fun, if you like, or differentiated is with the likes of Trossard and then Pukki and Jimenez. And actually, as I said, that's the bit you can just kind of, that's where you make your ranks. You need to have some kind of players that you kind of change and alter, as it were. But it's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks because I think a couple of those are going to have to move on. And it's just going to be spotting the next ones as they come up. People like Gallagher at Palace, I'm looking at him, looking in terms of bringing him in. I'm kind of kicking myself I've not got him in already, to be honest. I like Cornet, as my Northern father would say, from Burnley. He's another one I'm kind of considering because their fixtures start to look quite promising as well. I can see them as being differentiators as well and helping me kind of
And Antonio's interesting because he hasn't got the immediate form, and you're benching him. I think I am, and many other people, owners will be, or looking to move him on. And something I've been saying on the Scoutcast for a few weeks is Bowen is potentially, in FPL terms, whilst he's not as sexy as Antonio, he's the guy that's getting all the points. He's the guy that's on the set pieces, who's assisting and scoring, and could be up front should Antonio not make it. So one thing I've been thinking of is ditching Antonio for this poor fixture anyway, and then when West Ham's fixtures improve, just get Bowen in. Is that something you might consider?
Yeah, no, I think Bowen's a great option, and I think, like you say, he's kind of overlooked by so many people because he's just not seen as being sexy. Yeah. But I mean, if you look back, even last season, I thought he was a kind of quality player. I think for me, I'm just going to buy myself a bit more time. So I think give Antonio another week and then kind of make the call from there on in. But I mean, I know they've got a difficult next couple, but I think after that, kind of West Ham are still there. And I think with Antonio, I mean, I know he's not getting the points at the moment, but and maybe this shows my overcautious side, which will come back to punish me. But I think there's enough in terms of his kind of overall play, which says returns will come, and he is someone who I think can still do damage against some of the bigger teams as well. So for me, I'd keep him, and then we can look at it as we go forward.
Well, I've got the next few fixtures here. So I usually do next eight for these, but I'm going right up to next nine because this takes us up to and including January the 1st. So then there's a gap until January the 14th, I think, the next set of fixtures. And this shows that for those players that you might be looking to move on in a week or two. It says that, yes, you're right to back Son in terms of fixtures and those with Kane, I guess. In the great and the good, there's quite a few of them now. Tottenham are absolutely top. They've just got Leicester and Liverpool in 17-18, but the rest is a nice sea of blue. And there's plenty of opportunity there. And, of course, Conte, we'd imagine, would be getting more out of them there. Manchester United as well. So Ronaldo. And then you've got Manchester City still good. So you've already doubled up on them. So you've got them in place. And you were talking about Gallagher. He's in fourth. Palace are in fourth there. And you talk about, so Sarr, Wolves are at the bottom from game week 15 onwards. Their fixtures fall off a cliff. And then the likes of Rafinha with Leeds as well. The fixtures get turn. And Brighton. So Trossard's fixtures turn a bit. As well, so you can see, I mean, one immediate question there is Kane and or Ronaldo, one of those two. I'd be surprised if one of those two doesn't score hugely big over that time. How do you have a plan to get either of them in, or are you happy with Son for Kane, for example?
I think I'm happy with Son for Kane right now, just because and you're right, I mean, Kane could score big at any point, but I do think sometimes that we all rush around after the ones that could score big, if you like, and I think sometimes you just have to kind of accept that. in the fact that, you know, I think I've said it before, the kind of the opportunity cost, as it were. So you have to accept that sometimes there are going to be players. You can't own everyone, as the cliche goes. So there are going to be players that can score big. So I think Son, I'm happy with it at the moment. I mean, I think at some point there may need to be some surgery. I mentioned before, I'm curious to know what's going to happen with the Old Trafford soap opera, to see where that finally kind of lands, because there are some good players there, and if they suddenly do decide to play for whoever is in charge, whether that be Steve Bruce or Michael Carrick or Paul Lintz, whoever they're going to get in, I think that they're the ones that I'm slightly worried about. But I think that if you look down the fixtures, there's enough kind of still in that kind of mid-price zone that I could see kind of bringing
it's sort
in
of, sort of game week 16 time when Manchester United have Norwich, this great run really. Except for Brighton, obviously, but they've got Norwich, Brentford and Brighton, Newcastle, Burnley and Wolves. Lots and lots of potential to score. Or if Michael Carrick's in stars, lots of potential for them to all pass backwards for 90 minutes while Roy Keane has a go at them.
It depends if Ronaldo lets Carrick pick his team or not. I've got a theory that Ronaldo would take over managerial duty and just kind of let Carrick make the tea. And but we'll see.
But in terms of Ronaldo would require surgery. However, Son could become Rashford, for example, or indeed Fernandes somehow. Let's have a look at the expected goal involvements of the last four. This might sort of, you know, pinpoint some of your thoughts going forward. So, I mean, Salah there, you know, he's doing really well. But the only one that can better him in expected goal involvement, Josh King at Watford, who is weirdly on top of my shopping list because I have Adam Armstrong, who I don't want anymore.
Okay.
Not necessarily Josh King, but a player like Josh King.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of player you would consider getting in?
I'm not sure about Josh King, but if I look further down the list, bizarrely, Benteke, I mean, I hate to say it, but he's doing well in all the stats.
Yeah.
Palace do look a completely different outfit to the one that we all expected. He's always been a bit of a kind of confidence player anyway, or he's lacked confidence over the last few seasons, but there's definitely a good player in there. So he could be the next kind of pookie, if you like.
Well, we tipped him to be the differential for the next four on the scout cast. He must have heard, and it must have, you know, boosted his ego. Alexander Arnold's actually the only defender in this list. Everyone's going on, defenders, they're the ones who can score, the strikers are no more. Well, top of this list is a striker, third on this list is a striker, and not that many, but they're high up there, and just Alexander Arnold in terms of expected goal involvement.
That's true, but I also had a look at the another data set where it looked at the double digit hauls for the season, because I always find that quite interesting. And obviously Salah's in the lead, but if you look at Trent James and Cancelo, they're right behind him, or you know, they've had kind of three or four, etc. So that their explosive ability. So that's why I think all these data points are good. It's just trying to take a kind of overall view. But I'm still fairly happy with those defensive players.
And you were talking about your midfield and how in a couple of weeks, you know, you look to shake it up a bit. Well, here we go. I mean, Trossard's there at the moment, but Saka's still there. Foden. Mm. People are getting annoyed with Foden.
Yeah.
But the indications are that if you're going to get a Manchester City attacker, not defender, Foden could be the man, and Bowen is there as well.
Yeah, no, you are slightly talking me into Bowen, I've got to be honest. So that's job well done. But I think Foden is someone that I think would be worth looking at.
If like I'm working for the Bowen marketing board, you know. Warning: actual goals may not be included.
Very true. No, but I think Foden is someone that I would be interesting. And I think, as I said before, you're going to get rotation, but that's this season. We've all got fairly reasonable benches to kind of to cope with it. So why not go for someone who is seen as being a rotation risk, but can deliver kind of huge returns as well. So it's kind of cutting your cloth according to the campaign.
Okay, well, let's put your team back up again before we go, just to look at that. Remind people, especially those listening on the podcast, we've got Sarr in goal, James, Diaz, Alexander-Arnold, Cancelo, Salah, Son, Trossard, Rafinha, Pukki and Jimenez, and Antonio first sub, Foster, Livramento and Douglas Luiz there on the bench. Any planned actual moves for this week, or just looking to roll the transfer?
Probably going to roll it, like I say, for this week. I think they all look. There's enough there, I think, to get me. Hopefully, at least something reasonable. And then that will just give me an extra week of kind of looking at the data, looking at the performances, you know, to be able to have an indication of anything's going to happen in terms of kind of rotation. And then I can make my moves from there. But likelihood it will be. Swapping out some of those midfielders, or looking at one of those other strikers as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining me, and thanks so much for telling us all about the Great and the Good League and about how it's influencing your decisions as well. Because I always find that quite fascinating, and especially with your top 100 finish. Surely it's time. Can you be in the league? I mean, can I nominate you?
No, I'm going to veto myself. Oh, okay. Like I say, it's a very strict criteria. But it depends. I'll tell you what, if I get a top up 100 this year, then I will go for it. But okay. I know that's very unlikely to happen. So
you've thrown down the great and the good gauntlet. One more top 100. You have to go. If you get two top 100 finishes, you have to go in this league. Not on my expense, one of the other guys, obviously.
Well, that's a great, yeah, that's a great challenge. Who do I take?
Not me. Let's just leave me.
I've had begging letters in the past from Al's trying to make sure he didn't get kicked out. So anyway, we'll see.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining me. It's been really interesting, and good luck with your decision this week, and good luck with the rest of the season. You'll bid to be in the great and the good.
Thank you very much indeed for having me. Brilliant. Thank you.